At 23, my life changed forever. I was depressed, anxious, and scared. I didn't feel like my life had meaning. I didn't know what would happen if I stepped into my truth. On the other hand, I knew I had to make a change. I had to start taking responsibility for my life. Because I knew the change I wanted to see first had to begin inside of me. Hi, my name is Chris. That was the moment I started living openly. So tell me this, how does living openly affect business culture?
You know, it's a great topic. And again, I just want to first off say thanks for having me on here today. Really been looking forward to this conversation. Culture and business process change. I mean, culture in essence is the heart. I call it the heart and soul of everything that we do within business. It can be as simple as the mission of an organization. What is the mission? You know, mission, vision of an organization, and how does that tie back to their, for example, their spiffs or incentives and things of that nature. But to put it simply, you know, I would say culture is it's like the heart and soul of any well-run organization and or business today.
Yeah, I mean, so culture is the run of the game, and right now we are in a great storm, especially coming out of COVID, where we think of what is culture to organizations today. Is culture the environment? Is culture the building, the place, or the whole whatever that is, wherever you are? And how do companies really navigate that whole this nuance of thinking about the workplace of the future? What does culture look like? Because over in the past, 10 years, but most of the time we've been talking about that diversity, equity, and inclusion, representation, yep. And then belonging, and then making sure you're a good culture fit. That's part of the reason why you go through like 3 or 4 rounds of interviews, because you want to make sure you're a good culture fit. And then you get into this company, and then sometimes the culture fit kind of throws out the window. Like, it's only about like certain things, or the values are maybe listed in that handbook of the first day of orientation, and then you never look back at those values. But then there are companies that are very value centric, and they're saying like, we believe in trust, honesty, loyalty, and whatever that is. And you know, you keep to that. And so I think really the question that I want to ask is what is culture in your eyes?
It's a loaded question.
That's why I kind of tried to preface it that culture is so much, and it's this landscape, and it's this huge conversation. And so, like, where are you at in that conversation? What is that space of, what are you thinking about culture?
So, great, another great question, Chris. When I think about culture, I think about alignment. Okay. I think about this one word, alignment. Mm-hmm. And I'm reminded of my master's program at Pepperdine. And we were going through an organizational leadership. I personally went through, you know, basically a leadership and management track master's program there. And so it was a very heavily, there's a heavy emphasis on culture, mm-hmm. on change mm-hmm. management. And I'll never forget one of the classes I had was taking us through this process that we called a multi-contingency analysis. And in an MCA, multi-contingency analysis, you're looking at the 13 facets of an organization, everything from their mission and vision, which we mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. all the way to the incentives and rewards, how they view people, the organizational shape of that organization.
And that means flat or pyramid.
Flat, right? or expanded, or matrix is another, you know, yeah, version of that. And at the end of this process, and again, it's this rigorous set of questions that you take this organization through. Typically, you'll coordinate with some of the executive leaders, and you'll ask them these questions, right? And they'll give you the outputs. At the end of this, you'll get answers, and they're quadranted answers. So A quadrant, think of top left, top right, bottom left, bottom right. So you've got all these quadrants. And at the end of it, if your organization, i.e. if your culture is aligned, there will be a B quadrant or a C quadrant all the way through. And if not, then you have what we call a misfit organization or a misaligned organization. So, Chris, when you ask me the question, what do I think about when I think about the word culture? I think about the word alignment.
Mm-hmm.
Alignment.
So take us back, though, for the people that did go to B school, that whole B and C quadrant, what do you mean by that? And how do I think we need to help our listeners understand what does that really mean?
Sure. Just put it simply, let's say your answer sets are all A's, B's, C's, or D's. And if they're all A's, you say their mission is aligned to the overall organizational construct. Mm-hmm. On the next question, incentives and rewards. They heavily incentivize and reward employees, right? So that's an A versus B, which maybe they don't heavily incentivize or reward. They partially incentivize or reward. So it's just the variety of questions that we're talking about. So if you could put it all through a mulcher of four different answer sets for each of these questions that I mentioned, and there's 13 of them, which I'm not going to go through all 13.
Right.
That's essentially what we're talking about, Chris.
Yeah. So in psychology, we do this a lot too, is for surveys, and I guess this is kind of telling you the secrets behind the secrets. So like if you've ever taken any quiz of how blank I am or whatever, usually you have a question and then an answer choice A, B, C, or D. And sometimes, not all the time, so don't think that you can just quickly fix the test or whatever, answer the questions on the test. But usually all of the A's will be a part of one specific set of type of answers. And so if you answer all A's on a questions of 1 through 5, then they go in one quadrant, and that quadrant means something. So it could mean that this is something. And then if you answer all B's, then that means something. If you answer all C's, that means something, and so on. And so that's what Justin's talking about. He's basically saying, like, if you're presented with these 13 lists of MCAs. What did you say? What was the MCA? I'm blanking.
Multi-contingency analysis.
And there's those 13 different things, metrics that you're looking at. And if you answer A maybe three-fourths of the time, then that's where your organization most likely is in, and that means something. So that's – I don't want to dwell on that. I just want to make sure that people understand that's what we're talking about. And really, all this is really getting down to is, like, what kind of culture does your organization have? And if you fall into A, it's going to be that type of culture. If you fall into B, then that's your kind of culture. And so that just is a way of – assessing your organization from a consultant standpoint to understand where your organization is today, so that we can figure out, are you what in that A word? Alignment.
Yeah, aligned.
Yeah. If you're aligned.
That's the key measurement. And so, which by the way, this is chapter 6 in my book for any of you that have the opportunity.
So you know, you're an author. You're an author. What is the name of this book?
So the name of the book is Entrepreneurship, Changing Business Culture from the Inside Out. And it's really a business memoir of mine, of my journey in business and in life, to be honest, because there's a lot of personal stories that are integrated throughout. When I went through a major transition in my life and I actually pivoted from working within a corporate construct to I decided to finally make the leap and go and be an entrepreneur and start a business of my own.
Right.
Scary as shit, by the way.
But I think both are risky.
Yeah. Both are risky in their own way. But when I finally decided to do that, I was reminded of some invaluable personal development that I had learned, from Tony Robbins and others. And it was such that if you're going to start a business, you either have to have a lot of capital, to do so, so you can input into the marketing engine and this and that.
Okay.
You have to be a brand authority or both. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have a lot of financial capital, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I had done a decent job saving, but I didn't have a lot of financial capital. So I said, all right, I'm going to be a brand authority on, channel, on leadership, on entrepreneurship, on what I defined as entrepreneurship, which, by the way, when I wrote the book, and this was back in 2014, and still to this day, depending on what word processor you use, it may or may not pick up that word entrepreneurship as a squiggly line, meaning, hey, we need to, we need to change this word. But that word was not a word in Webster's dictionary. So I was definitely a pioneer, I would say, in terms of defining what is this new generation of entrepreneur, when what type of culture are they trying to drive within an organizational construct? Well,
so what is it? Don't keep us in the dark. What is it?
So us entrepreneurs, we're basically entrepreneurs, but we're the hidden gems within corporate organizations today, right? Mm-hmm. Or of the past. In my case, I consider myself one of those. What does that mean? It means that while many other people were being chartered with things to do and said, hey, here's your list of responsibilities, go do this. Mm-hmm. An entrepreneur says, okay, I could do that, but mm-hmm. I could also do this. And if I do this, it is probably going to be infinitely better than if I do that. So they're constantly challenging the norm, Chris.
They're looking for ways to make the business more effective, and they are seeing gaps, and they know how to fill them.
Yes, exactly. And or at least I'd like to think we do anyway. Mm-hmm. And so we're constantly challenging the norm. We're constantly playing that role of devil's advocate. And as a result, oftentimes we're pushing the organization forward into the future. And so it's a bit of a friction though, right? It's a bit mm-hmm. of a rub because some organizations, some leaders are not ready to manage entrepreneurs. They're just not.
And that's because they see entrepreneurs as people that don't want to do their job. That's not a part of your job description. It's like that reverse. That's not your job description. That's above your pay grade. I find that so interesting. And so it's the reverse, right? Your angry employees are like, why are you asking me to do this? This is not my part of my job description. Well, if you really think about your job description, it's this, but there's other things that, whatever I say to do, right? But then on the flip side, when you try to do, you're doing your job, but you're trying to do other things there, and you're maybe trying to do your job a little bit differently because you see a better way of doing it and a more effective way of getting the same results that they're looking for, if not better, but they just don't, the person above you may just don't understand why, how you're doing what you're doing, and they don't know, and you're right, they don't know how to manage it. So it's almost like, wait, if I let them do this, what does that mean for me, my job, and all of these things? Are they trying to Are they trying to go above my head? Are they trying to take my job? Or just it's too stressful. I don't know what to do. Why are they, if I let give them freedom, then that means the other team members won't have that same freedom. And how do I manage all of this? And that's what I just want to make sure that the listeners are hearing the conversations that are going in everybody's heads as you're thinking about what an entrepreneur is and what they're doing, though their intentions are really great, but this is what's going on and it's going to affect the culture of the organization. So continue.
100%. Yeah. And no, and I appreciate you emphasizing some of those sound bites, Chris, because that self-talk that goes on this is what we're trained on out of the womb as an entrepreneur. Yeah. is to avoid that self-talk or to rewire that self-talk to be more positively affirmed so that we can get through certain struggles. So,
yeah.
Culture is paramount though. And again, that was some of the genesis of leaving corporate America when I did, of writing the book when I did, was to help inspire others, because I knew I wasn't alone. I knew there was no way that I'm the only person out there on the planet that is working inside of corporate America and feels like I'm pigeonholed to doing only these activities. And I'm not saying that I was anti doing my job or my job task. I was saying I wanted to do that and I wanted to do all this other stuff that was going to break the mold, honestly, break the mold on what the norm was. It was going to really set the standard for things moving forward.
Maybe share maybe an experience when you were in that position where you were trying to do more, but you felt restricted. And tell me, I want to know how you were feeling and what was that like? What was those conversations like? And what were the perception of you at that time as well, like around, whether it's with your peers, your coworkers, or the leadership?
So we're going to go back a couple of years now. I'm actually older than I look.
You don't look a day over 30.
Oh, thank you, Chris. I appreciate that. that absolutely warms my heart. So going back to 2013, and 2013 was a milestone year for me, because I was heavily getting into personal development. That's really when I started to kind of come across personal development. I was investing a lot of my time into listening to podcasts every day, reading all the personal development books that you probably have heard of, everything from, Rich Dad, Poor Dad to Think and Grow Rich, all the ones you've heard of, right? And I started to go to some personal development seminars, most notably Tony Robbins ones. And
did you go to the Firewalk? Is that one of the ones?
That's the one I have not been to, is the Firewalk, believe it or not. I started with Date with Destiny followed it up with Business Mastery. I actually still have to go walk across fire, believe it or not.
Honestly, I am not into a lot of those major challenges that a lot of our these gurus do. But for some reason, I like that idea of the walking on fire, because I feel like, personally, I'm terrified of that. But it's not necessarily something that I'm terrified of, jumping out of a plane. Like, I want to jump out of a plane, with like a parachute.
Yeah,
I feel like that's more of a controlled experiment. But I won't do any bungee jumping. I won't do, because of the idea of being attached to something and then just being let go. That's freaking scary. I'd rather just jump out of a plane and pray that I land.
Pray that the chute opens.
Yes, I so rather that. I don't know why. I think that that's a little bit of my crazy, but the idea of walking on fire, I think that really is such a mindset thing. Because one of the things that, because some of the things I have done, I've taken cold showers. I've never gotten into the ice bath. That sounds crazy scary. I have done chirotherapy, so it's something similar, and I can do that for 2 minutes, right?
Chirotherapy, the get in the tank. I've done that as well.
Yeah. I mean, I like that, to be quite honest. And if that's right there with me right after the walking on fire, well, maybe it'll be something to do. But I get all of these personal development things, and I would love to, you know, do that. And I know that I'm getting off on a tangent just thinking about all of these things, but the reason why I'm doing it is about being out of my comfort zone, getting out of your comfort zone. And sometimes that's what we need to have happen in order for change to occur. And so you can continue on talking about Tony Robbins and your self-growth journey and how that was a part of what you were going through at the time in 2013 and all the challenges that you were facing becoming an entrepreneur and figuring all that stuff out.
Yeah. It was like I said, it was a milestone year for me in so many ways. Deciding to get into personal development, eventually I made the decision at the very end of 2013 that I was going to leave corporate America. I did so literally a month later after that. So in February, I went to business mastery in January. By March, I had left corporate America. Didn't really have that much of a plan, which I do not recommend to any of my coaching or consulting clients today. If you do not have a plan, probably not a good idea. But it ended up working out for me because one of the things I learned is a true entrepreneur, when their back is up against the wall, they will figure it out. And more than anything, I figured it out. I just hustled my ass off and I figured out a way to, first of all, build the business or build the framework of the business. Mm. Second of all, how to monetize services, right? Have a service catalog for consulting and coaching services. How to monetize those. And these are things they don't teach you in business school, by the way. You know, I didn't learn this stuff in business school. This is, as they say, school of hard knocks, or or what you kind of learn through development and experience. This is not exactly all through the book, right?
It's kind of like going through high school and no one teaching you how to do your taxes or how to buy a home or any of that, you know, the finance pieces of that stuff.
Yeah. Exactly. it's all new. But yeah, as I mentioned earlier, right, I said I didn't have the capital. I need to be a brand authority. So I knew I had to write a book, or I had to write a piece, or I had to do something that was a statement that said, Justin Nimmergood understands this topic intimately and is someone to be trusted in the industry for. Point blank. Okay. It's something I had learned not only in school, but more so through School of Hard Knocks and some of the personal development I went through. It was all pointing to, hey, you need to understand and be a brand authority. If you don't have a ton of money to throw at a business, be a brand authority for a business.
I have a question. Now that you've done that, do you feel that that helped you?
Absolutely. And not only do I feel like that helped me, I feel like going out and starting a business on such a whim like I did made me more effective in the long run. In the short run, I had all kinds of pains, Chris. I mean, pains of it took longer to turn a profit for my business than I really should have had. If I had planned it correctly, if I had executed it like by the book, like how I teach it now, it would have been a totally different ballgame. But it made me hardened, right? Mm-hmm. Those of you out there that follow, you know, maybe like Gary Vee or some of these other, again, personal development gurus, they talk about the need to be hardened as an entrepreneur, the need to basically get punched in the face, the need to go through some tough shit, something that's going to really make you grow up and develop from the inside out quickly. And I went through that, right? I went through that struggle and it made me a better entrepreneur and a better teacher of entrepreneurship in the long run. So
what did that struggle look like?
Oh, man. I'm talking, you know, couple months of eating, you know, rice and beans and oatmeal and just eating the same thing every day, because you didn't know where, when your next sale was going to come from or where it was going to come from.
You know? you're talking about this, the stress, the real stress that a lot of entrepreneurs don't talk about, that loneliness of being the only one and having to kind of like continue doing all that work and not seeing the results immediately. And then you got people around you that are starting to look at you, and then you got to have that, what do you say about yourself, and what are they thinking, and trying to make sure that you're maintaining this headspace, but you're also being hard. And I think that in itself kind of starts to harden you, because you're like, you have to almost create a shield, right? A shield to kind of keep you sane and keep you focused on the mission, right? Focus on the mission, right? Isn't that funny?
Focus on the mission, the mission impossible.
Right.
Yeah. And those of you that follow me, you've probably seen me post things, and I'll post when I'm suited up, I say that's my battle armor. Because I don't know any of y'all that have followed Ari Gold, obviously fictional character from
Entourage. Did you hear me? I said Entourage. I
was like, Entourage.
I like, my headspace is like changing the E-N immediately. Love that show.
He's a very passionate, very dynamic character in that series. He actually has a book, which is a fictional book, but I took some, there's some golden nuggets in it though. Even though it's a fictional book about business, it really has some interesting key learnings in there. And one of those he talks about is, as an entrepreneur or a business owner, when you go into a presentation or a board of directors meeting or any other meeting where you're pitching, you're trying to sell, you're trying to close, he's like, you better fucking go in with battle armor on. And in his words, battle armor is you're suited up. You know, it's like you, if you're, you know, of the Roman legion from thousands of years ago, you're not going to go into battle like the 300 battle without all your armor and your shield and your sword.
So are you saying this battle armor is like a suit, like just a suit and tie?
A suit and tie is just, it's in his eyes was, being battle, it was battle armor, right?
But also it was about being prepared, knowing your presentation forwards and backwards, knowing the numbers, knowing the company, knowing who's going to be in the room, expecting the questions that they're going to ask so that you can come up with so that you at the very least can give an intelligent answer to something that they're saying, right?
Exactly. Yeah, you hit the nail on the head.
Preparing, yeah, that's got to be that battle. Yeah,
you know, you not only got to look the part, but you got to walk. You know, got to talk, and you got to walk the walk. Right? They go hand in hand.
So we're in 2013. We're in March. You quit your job. You're eating beans and.
Well, I'm now in 2014. Sorry, 2014. And in 2013, I made that decision to leave corporate
America. That was a journey, right?
Yeah, by March of 2014, I quit. I put in my resignation. I quit. I didn't have a real plan of how I was going to support myself. I was actually with my, wife at the time, you know, ex-wife, obviously now, and how I was going to support our family. And it was tough, Chris. I mean, just one other, I guess, hardship story for you and for the listeners out there. I can remember things got so bad at one point in time. I always was adept at sales. So I took a commissioned sales job selling paving stones out of the back of my rental Toyota Camry. And I say rental because I was literally renting from Hertz on a month-to-month basis from a Toyota Camry and basically selling bricks. Their paving stones are glorified bricks, but out of the back of my Camry, just to make sure we had enough to eat every month.
And this is before the car prices shot up to like $400 a day or like every 2 days or something.
Yeah, if it was that back then, I would have never even been able to afford a car.
You would have been Ubering. You would have.
I've been Ubering and selling. Yeah, I don't know. But my point is this was me being hardened, right?
Yeah.
This was like as low as it gets, being hardened. And I'll never forget, I what I there was one night I had an epiphany. I'm like, what if you're going about it all wrong? What if, you know, rather than promoting your website and this and that, just start from the basics. Just do something really basic blocking and tackling. Go to a networking function, make three acquaintances at a networking function and see what happens. And I did. And that networking function, it was a Pepperdine networking function, led to my first paying coaching client, which then led to some referrals, which then led to my first paying consulting client. And before you knew it, now we're in year three of In Good Company's existence, which for the first couple of years barely treaded water.
You know, but you know what? I when you're saying that right now, I don't want to let that this moment pass. I feel like I'm in good company right now.
Thank you. By the way, some of the genesis of the name In Good Company was my last name is obviously Nimmergood. And I thought, what is In Good? And we want to be a community. We're all about building a community to develop next generation leaders, next generation entrepreneurs, for example. And I'm like, In Good Company. In Good Company. I was like, that's it. So that was the genesis for the name In Good Company, if you were wondering out there. But I had that epiphany. I started to make conscious strides to make these little millimeter, and they're literally millimeter shifts, millimeter pivots, right? And by year three, now I'm turning a profit. And year four, year five, growth. Now we're hitting six figures. Now we're hitting $250,000 in revenue. Now we're really knocking it out of the park. And I'm reminded of those moments when I was hardened. Because if it wasn't for those moments, I would have never pivoted my strategy. I would have kept doing the same fucking thing and getting the same bizarre results, right?
I want to go back a little bit. So how long were you married?
I was married just shy of 3 years. So we ended up getting divorced in 2016. She had a sexual preference that no longer aligned with me. So we decided to amiably, you know, end our marriage and move on from one another.
So 2013, this is all around the same time.
We had just been married in 2013. Yeah. Summer of 2013.
And that's around the same time you're like, I don't think I want to do this job anymore. Right.
Yep.
So you were going through some changes at the same time as you getting married and all this stuff. And
graduated from Pepperdine with my master's that summer too.
Right.
So lots of life changes.
You're going through changes. And I mean, it seems like it makes a lot of sense for you to want to make change all around you, because that's what I'm hearing you say. Like you want to help leaders, you want to help businesses, and it's all about making change. But you started first with the change within yourself.
Change must come from within. If you expect it of others, you must yourself first model the way.
And I think in what it sounds like too, so like when you were trying to make change in that organization before you left, what did that look like?
Yeah, and you asked a great question earlier, and I'll share a very brief story. You said, you know, how I was met with resistance or something to that effect. And this was really the moment, that milestone moment, that impasse where I'm like, I gotta get the fuck out of here and start my own thing, because we are so far misaligned now.
That's what we all want to know. We all want to know what this moment is.
I was doing a kickoff. I was working for Cisco Systems at the time. So this is where I worked and I worked.
Oh, so you're not even afraid to share the name.
I'm not even afraid to share the name. By the way, I still have great friends at Cisco Systems. But I will leave the manager I had at this time nameless,
okay,
for obvious reasons.
Okay.
But let's just say the manager and I did not see eye to eye. And my desire to exude entrepreneurship and entrepreneurial activities was not welcomed by him very much so. Such that we were at the beginning of, this was the beginning of 2014 now. Okay. So this is all this change and stuff is going on. And I'm inspired. I'm coming back from a Tony Robbins event. I'm on fire, right? I'm passionate. I'm
literally on fire.
I'm on fire, right?
Yeah.
And I came back and I'm at the kickoff. It was the Cisco AT&T yearly kickoff. And I was responsible for managing that partnership for Cisco at the time in the Western US. And we're at this kickoff. And I'm giving my pitch now. And I thought I nailed it. I mean, I had people standing up. I had a standing ovation at the end of it. I thought I nailed it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And go back to my car. My then manager is in town. He didn't live on the West Coast. He actually lived in Dallas. And he was in visiting, you know, to kind of see how I was doing and check up on me and whatever else. And we get in the car, you know, I'm basically driving him around town while he was in town for his business trip. And first thing he says to me is, so how do you think you did? I said, well, I think based on the, you know, people that were standing up, we had quite a few people standing up. We had really good questions. Good questions are usually a good sign of, you know, quality presentation. I think we had a lot of good engagement. I think a lot of people seemed to really, you know, like what was presented. And he goes, well, I didn't really see it the same way. I go, tell me more. And he says, AT&T doesn't need a Tony Robbins, Justin. They just need a channel manager.
Woo! I'm breathing in for you. Like, I'm like holding my breath because I'm imagining right now you're in the car, you're driving, right? You're driving.
He's saying this to me.
And you're in LA too, so LA traffic.
Traffic is nuts.
Yeah.
Traffic is nuts. And he tells me that they don't need a Tony Robbins, which is basically his way of saying you were too animated. You were too inspirational. You were too inspirational
much.
For them.
You were too much.
I was too much.
Yeah.
And it was at that moment I knew I had mentally already checked out of the company. Yeah. I was like, fuck this. I don't need to be a part of this anymore. Because obviously I am not appreciated. And believe it or not, people more than anything will leave a job for conflict with the manager, obviously I had that, or if they don't feel appreciated. Usually it's not actually about pay, by the way.
Actually not the top five at all. If you look at any stats, pay is not at the – I mean, it's not at the top of the five, but it is still important. But what I wanted to point out too is that LA, what I've always told people, the people that you want to be most mindful of in your company are the ones who live the furthest away from the location they have to drive to and from every single day. Why? Because they have the most time to think about what are they doing with their life.
And
they don't feel appreciated when they walk out that door or feel appreciated when they leave. That is a recipe for disaster. I can guarantee you that is like my number one secret to be able to point out those are the people that I know immediately are going to make a change the first. Those are the people that I just automatically gravitate towards too. When I go to any business, it's those people.
That's such a great tip, Chris. You know, I really hope our listeners out there tune into that, because think about it. If this is you, or if this is someone that you're managing,
yeah,
you really need to be conscious of this, because if they have, think about all that extra time that they have sitting in traffic or going to their site. And I know we're kind of limited with that right now with COVID,
right?
But we're going to be back to that soon enough. Yeah, that's the type of person that's going to say, like me, and say, "F this. I belong in a different role where I'm appreciated. where I'm aligned with my manager or whatever, and move on from it. So
Let's talk about why that was such a poor choice of management. Being a manager, like, you literally just got off stage presenting in front of all of these people. So what that, and I talk a lot about emotional intelligence. And so the first thing in my head is that beyond the work and all of the other stuff, you're a human being, right? And so what I, as another human being, have to recognize is what it took for you to do that. Just to even go on stage. If I'm being emotionally intelligent, I'm going to recognize that you have put in hours and hours of thought, time, and you probably didn't get any sleep last night, the night before. Yeah. You were probably very nervous the moment before you got up there, and you're probably on a high right now because you did get some claps and you got engagement. So you kind of don't need to ask me how do I think I did, because at this point, I feel like I did good, right? And so I think as a job as a manager is to recognize me as a person, and you should really just be like, thank you for all. It should be gratitude, really. It should be gratitude as an employee, a manager to an employee. I appreciate that work that you did. And you know what? I don't even care if you screwed up. That's going to be my first instinct, is to thank you for what you did, because it takes a lot of effort to get on a stage. And this is coming from someone that I've been on many stages before, starting in high school, like singing or being in theater or all the way to business and being in front of a lot of groups of people. I know what it's like to be up in front of people. I know what that takes, and just to be there is enough to say thank you for. So to immediately think that you're going to criticize, if that's your first instinct, then that you probably need a lot of coaching on your management style, because that's the furthest thing that you should be doing. And I'm going to let you talk, because I don't want to be talking all the time. But one of the things, analogy that I think in my head, is if you have a child and they went on stage and did a nice little presentation, you know, they were in a play, school play, and they forgot their lines or whatever, and they messed up, and you know what, when they come off the stage, what is the first instinct that you think of? Good job, buddy.
Yeah.
We enjoyed you. You're not going to be like, hey, so how do you think you did? You're not going to do that.
It's such a ridiculous question, especially when you put it in that way.
I know. And I mean, and here's the thing. I'm not excusing workplace performance and all of those things. There's a time and place. What I'm saying, there's a time and place for all of those things. Maybe that was not the right time. Maybe if he really felt that way, it could have been presented in a different way and in a different context.
Different way, different time, different context. I agree.
And plus, like, you made a presentation, get some feedback to support your opinion, right? Because that really was an opinion. That wasn't really about how well you did. It was about his taste of how you presented, right? That was just his personal taste or preference, or there was a lot going on with him. I'm not about to sit here and psychoanalyze him, because I could, but I can tell you that there's something else going on in that head of his that created that moment. But when I think of just normal business culture and appreciation is the number one thing that I think a lot of people really need at the end of the day. And it's not a high five. It's not a thank you box or anything like that. I don't think it has to be anything fancy. I think really at the end of the day, what people want to be just recognize that they are doing a job. They're doing the job that they're doing. And I said it very carefully. I said the job. I didn't say a good job. I didn't say a bad job. But just to do the job, I think that that deserves enough gratitude.
Yes.
Justin himself, thank you for being here. You know, I mean, especially on like a rainy day, you know, I know rain must have been hard for you to get here, you know, or you have three kids, you know, I know that, you know, whatever that is, it's just like saying like, I appreciate you for being here. I appreciate you for
the attitude of gratitude, man. I mean,
that alone.
We learn it from our parents, you know, or I did anyway.
Well, some people do. We all see that's the problem. We all don't learn the same things. But I wanted to point that out because I wanted to also tie it back into this whole topic of business culture that we've been talking about and what is important in culture and what is culture and all those things. I asked you, what was your definition of culture? And you was like, I don't know, it's a big thing. And then you talk about on entrepreneurship and what that looks like. And we were trying to define what that is and what it, and some people can see it as rebellion. Some people can see it as making effective, being more effective in improving change from within. And that's where I kind of want to pivot because I want to kind of end the show on that high note of thinking about coming in from within, because we know entrepreneurship is outside creating. We see something, we see a problem, and we want to go and fix it and create a business around it. But in the inside of an as an entrepreneur, we are doing that from within a company. And there's a lot of people that are out there that are just like you. I mean, I've been in that place too. That's why I can totally relate. I'm almost getting like, whatever story you're going to say, I've been there, maybe worse. You know, we all know these stories, the moments where people have been in the bathroom crying after the meetings and, or after boss has done something. We know these stories, the people, the times when you had to leave for the day, left for lunch and called in sick the next day, or, you know, all of these things. Yeah. I know I've been there, done that. I know it because of what you said. It's appreciation. And that's really when I think about workplace and culture, if I can really distill one thing, I want to really focus on that appreciation piece, because I think it's really kind of what's in my heart right now. But it's also when I think about coming from within, when we live a life, we are living a life from the inside out. And sometimes we put on a facade on the outside and we forget about who we are on the inside. And sometimes when we do that, we end up being in marriages that we shouldn't be in, right? And we don't realize that we need to make other changes. We end up being in companies that we shouldn't be in. We ended up being in lots of other places that we shouldn't be. And so that's a part of having high levels of self-awareness for ourselves. But for you and your story and in your book, then I'll make sure I put that in the show notes. Entrepreneurship, a guide for living your life. It's not living your life, but I'm trying to make sure I get the title right. A guide to
entrepreneurship, changing business culture from the inside out.
Culture from the inside out. Yeah.
From the inside out. And it's exactly to your point, you know, I know we're at time here, but just to kind of share my final soliloquy here. I believe we, especially as entrepreneurs or entrepreneurs, everything we do is from the inside out. I'm a big believer in that. Personal transformation doesn't come from outside in, it comes from within. So personal transformation starts here. Organizational transformation starts from within as well. Mm-hmm. And it starts from within at the personal level, at the personal cellular level even. So
people are the beating heart of companies.
They really are. They really are. And it's a shame to see that so much has been predicated on profits and whatnot. I think it's pivoted back a little bit. You know, the one good thing I'll say about COVID is it's brought back a little bit of that heart-centeredness. I think a lot of people are empathetic. Empathy has been reborn again within a lot of companies.
And you want to know why? It's because we're sharing. Empathy occurs a lot of time when we're in a shared goal and a shared environment. And COVID created that shared environment, and the goal was to get out of it. I think, or get to, yeah. So I think that's why empathy was so broad in these moments.
But it's back. Empathy is back. You know, heart-centered leadership is back. And I think we're in a, you know, we're in an interesting but a good place overall, that we have the ability now to continue to make strides toward positive change from within. So that's kind of my story. I hope everyone enjoyed it and maybe took a couple golden nuggets from our time here today. Chris, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
I do too. Like, this was such a great conversation. You'll definitely have to come back on the show at some point. I love just getting a chance to hear your raw stories, because like I said, the reason why I think they're so important is because what I know for sure is whatever your story is, someone else has similar stories. And when you share yours, it frees other people to share theirs. And it also frees someone to be able to be all they can be who they are, be their true self. And sometimes even though you may have people or things in our life, including a bad manager holding you back, that's not the end of the road for you. There's another way, another route. And like you said, we're on a new journey as a world, as we move forward and figure out how to move and navigate through these new changes. We are entering into a new workplace of the future and figuring out what does that look like. And culture is the heart of it. And we got to get the people part right. Got to be more appreciative and be it's really gratitude. It's really, at the end of the day, it's about who you are as a person. And that's why it is so important from working on the inside out.
Everything.
I ask everyone that comes on the show, what is living openly to you? What does that mean to you?
To me, I by the way, I love the title of your show. I mean, it's so necessary right now, and it's so timely. But living openly to me is living vulnerably. Mm. I think so often people are, you mentioned earlier, they have this shadow self, or they have this inauthentic self. We're wearing a mask of some sort, you know. That's not who we are at our authentic self, our vulnerable self. Living openly is being vulnerable, being okay sharing sharing some of my most vulnerable moments, where when I was at my lowest, when I could barely afford to pay rent or to afford, you know, rice and beans for my meals for the day. And, you know, I'm obviously in a much better place financially and otherwise here today, but sharing those moments is not easy. But I believe that it's necessary. If people truly want to connect with one another, we do so from a heart-centered position, from an empathetic position. And the quickest way to do that is to be vulnerable. So to me, living openly is living vulnerably, not being afraid to share your past failures or even your current failures, and being just open and honest about it. I have found that some of the best relationships in my life that I have today, or that I've forged over the years, have been from positions of vulnerability, where either someone has been vulnerable with me and I've said, you know what, I empathize with that, or I've been in that situation and it's caused a magnetism to that person, or I myself have been open and vulnerable and it has led to people being brought into my life at one point in time or the other. So yeah, it's being vulnerable, Chris, being open and vulnerable.
Thank you. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode. Keep the conversation going on Instagram. Visit livingopenly.com to find out how you can start living openly today. See you next week.